You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
In hour one, on the Todd Alba Show, we heard a hot mic comment by Brad Schimmel, former Wisconsin Attorney General and current candidate for Wisconsin Supreme Court, calling for a bloody revolution. On the other half of the ballot this coming April is Susan Crawford, and Earl Ingram of The Earl Ingram Show welcomed her on his show this week. Here's their discussion.
Don't imagine you're too familiar, and I don't see you anymore.
All right, welcome back to The Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. And as promised, I am honored to have on the phone lines the state Supreme Court Judge Susan Crawford. Good morning to you. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Earl.
It is an honor and a privilege to have this opportunity to have, a couple moments with you. Tell us a little bit about Judge Susan Crawford.
Oh, thanks, Earl. It is my honor to be here. Let me just say that first. I am a judge in the circuit court in Dane County. I've been on the bench since 2018. I grew up in Chippewa Falls in western Wisconsin, one of four kids. I started my career as a prosecutor at the Wisconsin Department of Justice, did that for many years, and worked hard to make sure that I was doing justice for the people in our state and crime victims and holding people accountable and making sure that the laws were interpreted correctly. I then later in my career was in private practice and often was working to make sure that I was fighting for people whose rights had been taken away from the government. So kind of from the other side, when school teachers' rights were taken away by the government, I was fighting for them in court to protect them. I represented Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin and their doctors to stand up for women's rights to access health care, and did a lot of work for our voting rights. So I've had a really broad career, and I've always really been focused on protecting people under our laws.
So I've often wondered, how old were you when you realized that this is the line of work that you wanted to do?
You know, I was pretty grown up, Earl. When I was a kid, I didn't know any lawyers and I didn't know any judges. And if you'd asked me when I was 10 years old, 12 years old, what I wanted to be when I grew up, I probably would have said I want to be a teacher because my teachers were my heroes. And that was what I aspired to do, was to be like them. And after I finished college, I actually went to graduate school to try to pursue that career. And ultimately, after a year or so, I just had some second thoughts about that and some doubts, and was feeling really pulled to pursue a career that was more about engaging in the big issues of the day and solving problems for people and protecting people's rights. And ultimately, that led me to law school and led me to the career I've had since then. So I would say I was, in my mid-20s before I came to that decision.
So if you're just joining us, I'm joined by a candidate for the state Supreme Court, Judge Susan Crawford. I guess I want to ask you before we move any further.
Yeah.
There's a guy in office right now who is doing everything he can, to destroy the judicial system that you and many others hold sacred. Your thoughts about what's happening right now and the challenges that the judicial system faces under President Donald Trump.
Yeah, well, Earl, I think what people should understand and what should give people hope is that the judicial branch is an entirely separate branch of government from the executive branch, and the courts exist to protect people's rights under our laws and under our Constitution. And the courts provide a firewall when the executive branch, and that's the president at the federal government level or the governor at the state government level, and you know, Congress or the legislature, when they take rights away from people that are vested under our Constitution, we go to the courts to protect people. And it presents that kind of firewall to protect people's rights. So that's why courts are even more important today than ever.
So let's talk about the state Supreme Court, you know, and the position that you are running for right now. The way you know, tell us a little bit about cases and how you guys determine what cases, let's say you're fortunate enough to become the next Supreme Court justice, how is it determined what cases are the things that you guys will hear?
Yeah, that's a great question, Earl. So the Wisconsin Supreme Court is unique among all the other courts in our state in that they do get to pick and choose which cases to take up. Parties, lawyers can present petitions from cases that have gone through the lower courts asking the Supreme Court to take up a case. And the Supreme Court votes, and if at least three of the justices decide that the case presents issue of statewide importance that merits consideration by the top court, then the Supreme Court's going to hear that case. So you see the Wisconsin Supreme Court making decisions in many cases that affect our most basic rights and freedoms in our democracy, our right to vote. There are two cases in the Supreme Court this term on women's rights to make decisions about their own bodies and their reproductive choices. Every season, every year, there are important cases that the Supreme Court's deciding that are going to affect all of our rights and freedoms. So that's why this race is so important, and it's why it's so important to make sure that that court stays fair and impartial and isn't taken over by, you know, extreme political people like my opponent, who is somebody who has a long history as a partisan politician, and I believe is trying to inject partisan politics into our Wisconsin
Supreme
Court.
You just stole my thunder. because I was going to ask you about partisan, you know, politics, and the Supreme Court is clearly a place that should not enter into the thought processes of the justices, because but we know that hasn't been the case over the last decade and a half, almost two decades. So in the face of that, how do you resist that? How do you push back? How do you stay away from that fray?
Yeah, well, I think it's pretty straightforward for me, Earl. I've always been fair and impartial in any case that I hear now as a circuit court judge, and that's the same thing that I'll do as a justice on the Supreme Court. And my approach is to, first of all, make sure I get the facts right, because the truth is really important in our justice system at all levels of court. Then I make sure that I understand the law and am interpreting and applying the law correctly. And I also am careful to consider that what's really at stake in any case is the lives of the people who are in front of me. You know, I'm not making decisions to announce some kind of abstract principle to the world. I am making decisions that resolve real disputes between real people and affect people's lives. And I think it's very important for judges to look at the context of their decision. And on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, their decisions end up being precedent or set rules for the rest of the courts in the state to follow. So it's important for the Wisconsin Supreme Court justices to consider how those rules are going to be applied in future cases. But I approach each case with an open mind. I don't prejudge or pre-decide cases. Again, unlike my opponent, who has been out openly announcing his views on various cases pending in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which is prejudicial to the parties in those cases and just an improper thing to do as a judge You got to stay open-minded. You got to remain impartial until all the evidence is in, all the arguments have been made by the attorneys, and only then do I make a decision.
855-752-4842. My guest is Judge Susan Crawford. She's a candidate for the state Supreme Court. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, this is arguably going to be the most expensive Supreme Court race in the history almost of the nation. Your thoughts?
Well, I wish it were otherwise, let me say that. But I am going to make sure that my campaign has the resources that we need to communicate my message to the voters, that voters know who I am, that they understand that I'm doing this to be a fair and impartial justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and that I'm going to work hard for their votes. And, you know, unfortunately, my opponent pledged very early on. He got into the race in way back in November of 2023 and immediately said that he'd be seeking national support from right-wing political groups to back his campaign. And that's what we're up against, is that kind of partisan approach. So I've got a great campaign team, and they will make sure we've got the resources that we run to have a level playing field and get the word out and help voters to understand what's at stake in this.
Well, race. I'll tell you, I am honored to have you on the airways. It certainly won't be the last time. It's a pleasure to get to put a voice to the face that I've seen. And on you know, in many places, so we'll be certainly having dialogue as this progresses.
Well, thank you so much, Earl. It was a pleasure, and I'd love to come back sometime.
Certainly. All right. Thank you very much. That's candidate for the state Supreme Court, Judge Susan Crawford. 855-752-4842 is the number. You know, when we return, got a lot to talk about. I want to talk about the fact that, what is the guy's name? Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And your thoughts as we were watching him go through his confirmation hearings on yesterday with the United States Senate. And we're also going to talk a little bit about the Democrats who are putting pressure on, I get it. 855-752-4842. We'll talk about it on the other side.
The Earl Ingram Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 8 till 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
On Tuesday earlier this week, there came an order from the White House to pause all federal funding and grants. Dom Salvia, along with Maggie Dawn, reflect on this unconstitutional action.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for hanging out, listening, and being a part of this fine production. You can join at 855-752-4842. Just PS working hard on the board, getting all the very important sound.
Only the most important.
To bring to our fair audience. And of course, it's Tuesdays right here in the Dom Salvia Show. So that means it's overtime with Maggie Dawn, her fine show preceding this one, 2 to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday on the Civic Media Radio Network. Maggie, welcome. Good to see you.
What's up, friend?
You know what? There's so much going on, Maggie, and I heard a little bit of your show today, and I appreciate that. I know people are fired up, let's just put it that way. And when I was thinking yesterday when we were talking about, what do I want to talk to Maggie about tomorrow? I was thinking about, you know, minimum wage, you know, no taxes on tips, perhaps a minimum wage increase, you know, some things like that. But then, of course, what we have is the latest chaos from this administration in this New executive order, because that's how we do things now. Executive orders. Bear with me for a moment, Maggie. Some of the reporting at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that I would like you to react. Molly Beck reporting, Wisconsin officials locked out of Medicaid portal after Trump freeze order. Wait, what? Molly writes, Wisconsin officials locked out of software portals that manage funding for the state's Medicaid programs following an order by President Donald Trump to freeze federal assistance, according to a source with knowledge. The Trump administration indicated in its announcement of the freeze that the move would not affect Social Security and Medicare programs, but online portals nationwide were down on Tuesday ahead of the 5 p.m. implementation deadline. Spokeswoman for Trump said the White House is aware of the Medicaid website portal outage. We have confirmed no payments have been affected. They are still being processed and sent. We expect the portal will be back online shortly. Trump spokeswoman Caroline Levitt said in a post on social media platform X. So, Maggie Dawn, from my understanding of how things work, Congress, you know, makes the bills. They do the budget, right? And then the president signs it, and the executive branch enforces the laws and spends the money as dictated by law and by the Congress. Am I remembering how democracy works in this country properly, Maggie?
Yes, Congress has the power of the purse. It sets legislative priorities through the enactment of laws. And gasp, the executive branch is supposed to execute that stuff. In other words, do it.
So if the executive branch declines to do it, quote unquote, to execute the laws as ordered by Congress, are they, in a sense, breaking the law themselves?
Yeah, there's the Impoundment Act, which deals with presidents or executive branch officials trying to monkey about with a congressionally enacted budget, which is what you see here. They're going to try to get around that argument and arguments that they're acting in violation of basic separation of powers principles by emphasizing that this is only a temporary pause to get agencies in line with Trump administration goals. The problem, of course, is its grotesque overbreadth. There's no like, hey, this level of things, or, you know, only at the highest level or at this detail level. The language in the order, and it's not an order either. It's weird.
Yeah,
I'm just going to. It's not an executive order because it's not signed by the president. It was issued by this guy, Matt Vaith, acting director of the Office of Management and Budget. I got calls last night as soon as this thing dropped, and people were like, have you read it? What does it mean? And I was like, I have no idea what it means. And what I do know about government officials, you know, when they're threatened with criminal prosecution, when they're threatened with firing, their risk appetite gets real low. So one of the practical impacts of this is when vague, many government actors will tend to sort of take the zero risk approach and stop doing all kinds of things that might be arguably caught up in this weird two-page memo devoid of any legal analysis at all whatsoever that presupposes it can override a congressionally adopted budget. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I mean, if you can override the Constitution, certainly you can override a legislative budget.
Yeah.
I mean, it's President Trump. Breaking news, and thank you to the Civic Media team for bringing this to our attention. The AP is reporting a federal judge temporarily blocks Trump administration freeze on federal grants and loans. Shocking. Didn't take that long. U.S. District Judge Lauren Alikhan blocked the action Tuesday afternoon, minutes before it was set to go into effect. The administrative stay pauses the freeze until Monday.
Why is this happening? Aside from the tilt towards fascism, Donald Trump, the explicit racism, misogyny, hate, anti-Semitism, from a fundamental separation of powers, you want to call yourselves the Federalist Society, federalism principles that you say you believe in. What has made the necessary precondition to this is the utter dysfunction and breakdown of Congress, brought about and facilitated by the Supreme Court of the United States enabling and frankly blessing partisan gerrymandering and racial gerrymandering that enables legislators to choose their voters, which by definition makes congressional districts and all legislative districts more extreme, which breaks down cooperation and collaboration and bipartisanship, which means the legislative branch has stopped functioning. And I think you see that writ large. And frankly, Democratic responses to that, I mean, the party here, have been anemic.
Well, I think
it's like, oh, we'll wait for the lawsuits to make their way about the maps, and then we'll go back, and then there'll be another lawsuit, and maybe we'll get like a better map. Yes, but Congress is now a failed branch of government. And that is what is making this power grab by Donald Trump, blessed by the Supreme Court, along with presidents or kings. That is going to be their response.
Can you blame the entirety of the Congress, though, Maggie Dawn,
yes,
when the Republicans are going along with it? I mean, what are the Democrats to do? No, I know, but in this circumstance, right now, today.
Okay, I'll call it out. Stop with things like introducing the Green New Deal when it talks about farting cows and stopping meat production because it makes us all seem extreme. That was not helpful, right? When you look extreme,
methane is a byproduct of the process. If you're not, how can you not possibly talk about the pollution of whatever it may be?
You have to, but the context matters. And if you lose the ground of reasonableness and you cede it to the other side who can make you look clownish, it makes the idea of compromise all the more difficult. So, yes, I do hold Democrats responsible. But I mostly hold Republicans who have made voter suppression and gerrymandering their watchword and guide. They have enabled this. They are culprit number one. We're just an accessory.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salve Show. It's Overtime with Maggie Dawn. You can join in as well, 855-752-4842. Looks like last week, Wednesday, some polling on congressional job approval by economist in YouGov. Congress, 19% approval, 57% disapprove. I think that's up from 17. Come back with us, 855-75-CIVIC.
The Dom Salvia Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 4 till 6. To learn more about this show and all the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. We go now to Mino and the Mayor out of Green Bay, and nothing says Green Bay like the green and gold. Green and Gold, the movie, directed by Anders Lindwall, is coming to theaters this weekend. Jim and John welcome Anders on to the show to talk about making the movie and how it's a heartfelt tribute to rural America's strength and perseverance. To hear all of the shows featured on the Civic Media Spotlight, download the Civic Media app available on the Google Play or Apple App Store, or catch them after the fact in podcast form on civicmedia.us, Spotify, or Apple Music. Now, here's Mino and the Mayor.
Take Mino and the Mayor with you anywhere. Download the Civic Media app today from the Apple Store or Google Play Store and text the studio directly, all from the Civic Media app. Download it today. Now, once again, here's Mino and the Mayor, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back. Mino and the Mayor here, 97.9 FM WGBW in downtown Green Bay, 98.3, 96.5 FM WISS in Appleton and Oshkosh, Civic Media app worldwide, 1590 AM in Finland and 1100 AM in Prague.
Or something like
I'm
that.
I'm giving them a shot.
Yeah, close okay. enough.
Yes, I am. Very honored to have a very special guest. I am so excited about this movie. Anders Lindwall, director of Green and Gold, the movie. I just saw a trailer last night. Anders, first of all, thank you so very much for taking the time to join Mind on the Mayor here in Green Bay.
Oh, you bet. Excited to chat with you guys. Thanks for having me.
And I just have to read one line, you know, in the about thing. You hear this all the time, but his hope for his work is to temporarily draw people out of the universal ache of human suffering and inspire them with childlike goodness and beauty. Like, that's an awesome mission statement, you know? And I saw a little bit of...
And the thing is, though, I think you copied us, because every day when we start our show, we repeat that mantra. Yeah.
We hold hands.
I bet you guys do. Yeah, for sure.
Anders, I have to ask you, where are you from in the UP?
From Iron River, Michigan.
You're a Wycon.
Just across the border.
I am. How do you know that?
I'm an Agati miner.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
In fact, I go so far back in my, not my roots, but in Iron River. You were in Iron River, right? You're a Wycon.
Yeah.
My brother ran, you're too young for this probably. My brother was manager of the Iron River Montgomery Woods catalog store.
Oh, my. Remember? Yeah, I'm too young for that, I think.
A lot of people are.
My other favorite thing, though, because we used to play ball against Crystal Falls and Iron River and all those places, our favorite thing was Riverside Pizza, and we now have one in Green Bay.
I know it. You know, I actually just filmed an interview there. This was a week ago, ironically, when I was passing through town with Brad Zima, who's, I don't know if you know him at all, but it was surreal to see like Iron River memorabilia in a Green Bay store.
That's awesome. By the way, you're not the most famous guy to come from Iron River. Baumgartner, the one that gold medal in the Olympics a few years ago, may have taken that spot. What do you think?
Yeah, no, it's funny because Nick's a pal of mine.
Oh.
And when we had the red carpet event at Lambeau, he came on down for it, took a bunch of pictures, and he's been hustling it on social media trying to help us get the word out. So.
Oh, that's phenomenal. Yeah. Fantastic.
All right, so I know you've been asked all these questions, but maybe our listeners haven't heard them, but what inspired you? Where'd you get the whole concept of the Green and Gold movie?
Yeah, it came because our grandfather, I say our a lot because my brother and I did the film together.
Right.
Our grandfather was a dairy farmer. And so we kind of, you know, that farm, the dairy part of it was shut down, but we kind of, you know, grew up around some of the ag community and just always thought, you know, aside from the greater upper Midwest, we were surprised at how few farm stories that were actually told out there in movies. And so, you know, it's such a prominent part of American life and for all people's lives, really. It's such a baseline need. And then, you know, also kind of just how difficult of an operation they are to run. So
right.
It felt like, it just felt like a really ripe story to tell. And that, you know, especially that area, you know, where I grew up, it's just like that, you don't see that in movies. And when you do, it's really, it feels like it's always poorly done, or they're like these kind of hokey folks which was just so different than the experience that I had growing up.
Yeah, I hated the one, what's his name? Great actor, phenomenal actor. It's about deer hunting in the UP, the 50.
Yeah.
That was so dumb.
Yeah. It's that kind of stuff, you know, that we just didn't. It's like, man, I get it, has its place. Like everything has its place, right? But
yeah.
But it was never the other side of that coin, which is like just wonderful people who are wholesome and taking care of their neighbor, doing their, you know, like really responsible, hardworking, kind. It's like that side I'd never seen.
Can I ask you on the business side of things? I was in office and people would come in with movies all the time. The missing
Jim. Genie. Okay. So Jim here, I don't know if you know the background. He was the longest serving mayor in Green Bay history at 16 years. And was actually featured in two movies, none of which he actually watched.
They weren't that good, and I'm not a big.
He actually watched. Anderson, listen to me. he went to the premiere. He went to the Green Bay premiere.
I did,
and he was bored, and his role hadn't come up. And he goes to a nutshell. He goes, "How much longer? How much longer is this movie?" And the guy goes, "What did he say?"
The guy said 50 minutes, and I'm like, 15 or 50? He goes, 50. I went back to my wife. I said, "Let's go." Yeah, just they didn't catch me. But I want to say that Oscar Goodman, who of course was the mayor of Las Vegas forever, if you did a film in Vegas, he wrote right in the contract that he had to have a cameo role. He really did. It was.
Did you get that memo, Anders?
You didn't get it from me. But
nobody sent me that memo.
Okay, well you're lucky I wasn't in office when you did this. But there were a couple movies. Where'd you get? Can I ask? You don't have to tell me. But the financing, because people come in and you read the scripts and sign this confidentiality thing. Don't ever show this to anybody. It's like, yeah, I won't. But
yeah,
getting them off the ground,
tough.
How'd you do it?
Yeah, so it's, you know, every project I think can be a little different. It depends if you're financed from studios versus private equity. And we didn't have any connections into a studio, so private equity was like our only shot.
Wow.
So it was because my brother and I, we do commercials for a living. That's how we pay our bills. And so we, it was actually a guy, he owned a NASCAR team, and we had done a bunch of their marketing for the NASCAR team. And they ended up winning the cup that year, and we just had a great relationship with the CEO, and he pulled us aside, you know, was like, what else are you guys doing? And I love the work you guys do for us. It's so good. And that's, you know, we told him about wanting to make a movie, and he was like, I want to make a movie too. And so he was like our first initial investor. And then, you know, we kind of, once you have the first investor, it's a little bit easier to get the other ones on board.
Yeah.
You know, it's still hard. It's not, I thought it would actually be easier. It's still, because I think the reality, I don't think a lot of people know this, but like, I think it's 9 out of 10 movies lose money. Wow. And so you're talking a major high risk investment.
Right.
And
that wasn't Joey Logano, was it?
No, it wasn't Joey Logano. All right. No.
But I think we're going to ask you advice for people who want to aspire to be like you and your brother. To build those relationships, I mean, some of these artists are just all into their art, and that's great. Yeah. But you got to build relationships. Like, that was smart what you did with the NASCAR guy, and winning the cup didn't hurt. But but financing is part of that. I'm so glad that worked for you. And I, even though you said 9 out of 10, that 10% can ring the till.
It wasn't Kurt Busch, was it?
No, it was the group was Furniture Row Race.
All right.
is the group.
John's working on a movie.
Hey, Anders, yeah. I have to, and following up with what Jim says too along those lines, how does somebody from Iron River, Michigan, who, you know, grew up in the, I mean, that's the real UP, how do you go from that to where you are right now with Craig T. Nelson, who is a phenomenal actor and, of course, all the right moves and coach and all these great things he's done? He could take his pick of projects. How does this kid from Iron River get into the position you're in right now? Hello?
Oh, hello?
Hello. Yeah. Yep, there we are.
Did you hear Johnny's question?
Hello, Anders? Anders, you there? Hello.
All right, we'll wrap up. We'll call back.
Yeah, we lost the call. Okay.
That's a good question, though, because, you know, you think if the guy, well, my parents were, we lived out in L.A. or New Yorkers.
We were friends with so-and-so.
He knew somebody. His kid became real famous. I called him. But, yeah, that's pretty cool from Iron River. Iron River.
You ever been to Iron River? It's actually a pretty cool place. That's where, you ever go to Ski Brule?
Yes.
Ski Brule is basically Iron River.
Oh, yeah.
It's right outside of there.
Okay,
It's a great little town. It really and truly is. Great little town.
I think it's known more as I'm going up to Ski Brule.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But it's great. There's beautiful lakes around there, everything. Anders, we got you back, buddy.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. I'm sorry about that, too. But again, how does a kid from the UP, a small town in the UP, go from this? And because I'll be honest, I grew up in a little mining town in Nagani. You grew up in a little mining town, Iron River. How did you get from there to here?
Yeah, you know, it was a high school teacher, actually, who I wanted to be like Nick Baumgartner and be a pro skier, actually. And
I was just telling Jim about Ski Brule.
Right? Oh, yeah. No, I'd love to plug Ski Brule for anybody listening out there. I spent so many days out there. Right. But, yeah, I wanted to be a pro skier, but I had a, you know, high school teacher saw me making these ski videos. And he said, you know, what else are you going to do if you don't end up going pro? And I was like, I don't know. I hadn't thought about that. And so he's like, you're really good at film. And so he kind of got me interested in like thinking about maybe that could be my other career path, and totally changed my life. So I figured out some scholarships, how to go to school in Los Angeles. And when I was out there, it was funny because my first class in university out there, film class, I noticed like all my other friends, like they grew up, their dads are producers on movies, and you know, it's Los Angeles is the business. But I just was suited for what I was doing. I was just like a little bit, I had just like a creative knack that I knew I was good at. And just, so that was when I first was like, oh, maybe I could actually do this. And so, yeah, I went right from college, just started directing commercials because that was the only thing I could figure out how to do to make money. And, you know, and then it took 20 years of doing that before I was able to get a crack at doing a movie. So
overnight success.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just a 20-year one.
Nobody sees the grind. I think that's pretty cool.
That's
what you're saying about going out to L.A. Mm-hmm. And you know what you realize? And I'll be honest, I'm not trying to blow smoke at myself in any way, shape, or form. But when I, you know, left the UP and I go down to Arizona State, and same thing, yeah. I'm sitting in these classes with all these frat boys whose dads were whatever, whatever. But when it gets down to the nitty-gritty of having to do stuff, they kind of crumble a little bit. I think there is something about a small-town guy who kind of – I remember I was in this one class. This kid was like, oh, it's an interviewing class. And he's from L.A., yeah. Big frat boy, you know, mechanical engineering. He goes, I just need an easy 4.0 for this class. He ended up dropping the class because one of the things in class, the teacher was tough. He goes, you must go. You've got 20 minutes. Interview somebody. Come back. Write it up. Tell me what face-to-face you had with them. And he couldn't do it. He couldn't do the talk. He could do anything you want with a book, but he couldn't do that face-to-face thing. I remember he came in, he's just sweat pouring out of his face. He says, I couldn't do it. I couldn't just talk to a stranger. So, I mean, I think sometimes in the UP, we're born with a little bit of a gift of gab that we can don't you agree with that?
Or
totally.
Or be naive.
Or naive, whatever it is.
It's a red cocktail of naivety.
Right.
Anders, I'll tell you a quick thing about that. Can we stick around for a one-minute break in just a minute?
Yeah, of course.
Okay,
yeah, no
so
trouble.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, when he came back to Milwaukee, they retired his jersey and everything, and he says, you know, I apologize. I wasn't very friendly, but – it's amazing. Any place I was in the world or something, somebody would come up and just say, Kareem, thank you, man. We're Bucks fans. And he goes, and also, has anybody ever heard of the UP of Michigan? I could be in Zimbabwe and somebody comes up and says, hey, Kareem, I'm from the UP. And it's like, what the heck's the UP? And he's saying this at his acceptance thing. And I could just see Upers doing that, can't you?
I love that. Oh, I love that. Totally. I mean, I have to, you know, my folks, anytime I take them anywhere, they're always just chatting everybody. You know,
yes!
It's like,
yes!
Yeah, there's a,
that's awesome.
There is, like you said, there's a special gift there.
You know, that and a work ethic, that's
we got
that
a super
chicken.
Quick break. This is awesome with Anders Lindwall, director of Green and Gold, the movie, back right after this.
Mino and the Mayor is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WISS and WGBW weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
It's February. Pete Schwabba on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba welcomed on filmmaker Nathan Demming to talk about his upcoming film, February.
Welcome back.
Conrad, we said Thursday is like Christmas Eve of weekdays. Monday is just like, what, the Monday of weekdays?
Yeah, I think so.
Even when you have a lot to talk about, it still feels like a Monday. And I said that without swearing. All right. It is my pleasure, ladies and gentlemen, to welcome to Nightlight someone here in the a guest. I love when a guest comes to the studio. He's a filmmaker. He's a Wisconsin guy making his home in L.A. right now. But he's back here promoting a film he did called February. And he's taking it around the state. I love this idea. Nathan Demming joins me in the studio now. How are you, buddy?
Hey, Pete. Good. How are you?
Doing great. Great. It's fun that you made Green Bay part of your stop on the tour. Yeah, I know you got to – let's talk about February first. Let's start there. This great film, and it's the follow-up to
– January.
January.
And can you guess what's coming next?
I wish it was July, but it's probably March.
It's March.
Yeah. Right. So tell us what do you want to talk about, February 1st or where this idea came from? You want to make a movie for each month.
Yeah, that's my dream. I want to make a movie for every month of the year. I'm calling it the Year Project.
Okay.
I'm going in order. And I have this larger story that I really want to tell. It's kind of like there's this Polish series I'm kind of inspired by called The Decalogue. If you've heard of that, this filmmaker named Kieslowski, he made 10 films, one for every commandment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm doing 12 films, one for every month of the year, all in Wisconsin, all different, like, Wisconsin stories, Wisconsin people. So the first one's about this kind of, like, loudmouth church volunteer overseeing a shotgun wedding in the coldest month of.
Which is really funny. Yeah. I've seen the film. That she is hilarious.
She's a very sharp cheddar flavor of a character.
It sounds like you've got a little commandment breaking in those films you're making too, which is interesting. Yeah. Nice little tribute you worked in there.
Yeah. And then February, though, that's the one I'm taking around Wisconsin. So excited. We're going all over the state. And this one's about a Latino immigrant who's struggling to fit into Wisconsin until he finds ice fishing. And it's about a lot more than that, but that's kind of the basic premise. So.
I love it. It's such a great... Are you an ice fisherman?
I knew it a little bit before I made the film, but then I got really into it while making it.
You brought something here. Let's show this on the stream. He brought his actual ice fishing equipment. What do you call that guy?
This is a tip-up, which you didn't know what it was, right?
I didn't. Well, now I do that I see it, but when you said I brought a tip-up with me, I'm like, well, you can't drink on the show. I didn't know what you were talking about. But yeah, this is like ice fishing. The flag goes up when you get a bite, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a good sign.
And then you reel in that perch.
Yeah, it's, or whatever.
Or whatever.
Usually something worse, yeah.
That's pretty cool. So where did you get this?
Pawn shop.
People pawning this stuff?
Yeah. Wow. Actually, so one of the funnier stories about making the film is most of the cast was cast like they were actors, you know, I auditioned them. But then the ice fisherman character, which you saw the film.
Yeah.
There's a very strong Wisconsinite character who's an ice fisherman. I could not find anybody. I was casting everywhere. And eventually I just threw up an ad on Craigslist. And this guy got back to me, or his wife got back to me and said, oh, this is totally my husband.
He probably had no idea. She was volunteering him.
Yeah. And then I met him. He was perfect. I was like, oh, the whole film like came to life. He had never acted before. And then he was perfect in the movie. And actually most of the gear in the movie, not this bit, but most of the gear in the movie was his own gear. Then
is that
too.
Crazy?
And like, cause I had some that I was getting that would look older, like look used and stuff. And then he was like, that's a piece of crap. That's a piece of crap. You know, we're not using that. You know, we're going to use my stuff. So yeah.
And he was good.
Yeah. Yeah. He's really good. I think. Yeah.
It just goes to show you can never pigeonhole people. Like I remember when I shot a film in Northeast Wisconsin and we shot on this farm and the guy next door comes over. He's this like young farmer and he's like telling me all these movies he'd seen. And I'm like, whoa, he's like way ahead of me. And he lives on this farm in Marinette County. He's like, yeah, we got the Independent Film Channel and all that stuff. Like,
well, that's something I'm kind of passionate about with doing these month films, which deliberately I want to do like over 15 years. Like,
man,
every few years I'll make one.
That is
impressive.
But
I want to make them like all in Wisconsin with Wisconsinites, because I think there are so many talented people here.
Absolutely.
Characters we've never seen before, people that don't normally get on the big screen, and I'm excited to find them and meet them and make something.
They're out there.
They're out there.
You've already found some.
I've already
like
found some.
You've done January, February, March. If you need someone in the warmer months, I'm happy to help you out. let's talk about that. Is it tough to find, you know, Wisconsin, as of right now anyway, isn't, I wouldn't say it's known as a film state. You're looking for talent in a state that's not necessarily a film state, in a pretty rural area, aside from your leading actor. First of all, where did you find your leading actor? And then where did you find everybody else? Did you use a bigger casting director or just put out stuff locally?
Well, we did cast out of LA. So okay. David, yeah, like a majority of the cast is Latino and half the film is in Spanish. Like that clip you had earlier is in Spanish. Yeah. So obviously a very large talent pool in LA to draw from.
Sure.
Yeah, David's from Riverside, California. He's a really good young actor, and he's actually coming out for the first week.
Oh, nice.
And I think he had a good time here when we filmed. He has a fridge magnet, apparently, that he is a treasured possession now. But,
okay.
But yeah, whenever I ask him, he's just like, I just remember it was cold. That's all I remember. like,
all right, so you're doing this screening. You're showing it around the state. What are some of the cities you're showing it in? Aside from Marinette, you're coming to where I live, which I think is great, at the Mariner Theater on the 22nd of February.
Uh-huh, and you're going to be
1
there.
1 o'clock. I'll
be
there
fun.
Introducing it. Yeah. We could do Q&As. We could do the twist if you want, whatever. I'm happy to help you promote this because I think it's such a cool idea. And not, I mean, hasn't been done before. I mean, what you're doing over 15 years as your plan, the patience, you have to have like documentary film patience. You're like the guy who did Boyhood, Richard Linklater.
Yeah, I was going to say, a lot of people have done other things plenty like this. I'm just finding my own path. And for some reason, I'm really inspired by the months of the year.
Yeah.
I just think it's a great container for stories, especially in Wisconsin, where we have such strong
Absolutely.
Different months. Because I've lived in L.A. for 10 years now. You remember you've lived in L.A.
Yeah.
every single month is the exact same thing. So,
you know, it's funny you say that. The longer you're there, you do notice the differences.
Oh, yeah,
but they're so, like, when you get there, it's like, why are you watching the weather?
Yeah.
There's nothing that's the same every day. So where else are you showing the film around Wisconsin? You got Marinette. You're at the Door County Film Festival in mid-February. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that, too.
Yeah.
But where else around the state can people see February?
Well, you name it. We might be going there. We have our full list online at februaryfilm.com/screenings.
Okay.
Off the top of my head, Alma, Richland Center, nice. Eau Claire, Toma, Sparta, Elroy.
All right.
We're going all over.
So Nathan also took the liberty of bringing some fun facts about the month of February, which is totally, that works for tonight. And then we're going to do a quiz, too, about some of the cities you're playing in. So how well you know your Wisconsin trivia, we will all learn. You're welcome to text or call in answers. We'll put these out there. We'll see if Conrad and I can guess a few. Nathan Deming's in the studio, folks. He is an up-and-coming filmmaker, incredibly talented, joining me here on Nightlight. We're talking about his film, February, which you can see most likely coming to a city near you in Wisconsin. This is Pete Schwab and Nightlight. We'll be back with more with Nathan after the news on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nightlight with Pete Schwab is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.